We build up our farms, gardens, and homes to suit our needs. Then they sneak in and steal it away. Their unrelenting assault on what we thought was ours leads us to ask, how can we control all those pests?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 940th edition of the Food Chain Radio program. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in Toronto who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. But whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Aaron on the boards. Hello, Aaron.
Hello.
Also producer Kelly Bayer on the stories. Hello, Kelly.
Why, hello.
And away we go. Folks, we build up our farms, gardens, and homes to suit our needs. Takes a lot of work, right? Then they sneak in and steal everything they can. And there are millions and billions, maybe even trillions of them. They are the aphids that suck the life out of crops, the deer that jump the fence and eat the roses, the gophers that tunnel in and eat the roots from underneath the new peach tree, the raccoons that march the entire family in through the dog door and wreak havoc on the kitchen, the rats that move in and foul up the place with fleas and fecal matter, the skunks that waddle through as if not to be denied by anyone or anything. If we do not control these pests, they will control us. One way to control pests is to poison them. The friendly farm and garden supply store down the way will most likely have enough poison stocked to kill several million critters. However, in our long history of poisoning pests, we have come to recognize a significant downside to the strategy. Poisons are indiscriminate. When we poison mosquitoes, we also poison pelicans. And given all the poisons we have available to kill things, well, just no telling who or what we will wipe out next. A different strategy is to outwit the pests. This strategy, of course, will require us to do some thinking. But as Sun Tzu said in his Art of War, if you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the results of 100 battles. Today we go in search of ways to win 100 pest control battles by thinking, and so we'll ask, which pests pester us most? What are the reasons and the seasons some of these pests pester us? And how can we control pests without poisons? Here to help us trap an answer, we have Thomas Whitman. He, the proprietor of Gophers Limited. Thomas, welcome to the Food Chain.
Welcome. Good morning, back. Michael.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Gosh, we were talking before the show started, and you talked about being working up at the UC Santa Cruz Farm and Garden Project. And one day you sat down and calculated how many crops you were losing just to gophers.
That's right. We were, I was trapping every morning there and teaching people how to trap gophers, that is. And I started thinking, well, how much are we losing every day? And it was pretty significant. So I started counting, you know, if you lost a tomato plant, that would yield about 25 pounds of tomatoes. That would convert into like $150. So I started adding up all the different plants and their values, and every day I would do a count, and it averaged about $600 a day that we were losing.
$600 a day on a school experimental farm.
Right, this is like a 5-acre farm.
Yeah, $600. So if we don't fight, we lose, right?
Well, that's right. You know, a lot of people say, well, maybe we can share with the gophers, but the reality is with rodents is the more food there is in the environment, the bigger the population.
The more gophers you get.
So if you're putting more food in the environment, you have to take the responsibility to manage the problem.
So you come to this career in pest control in a very unusual way. I mean, you started off working in the Peace Corps. You spent, what, 3 tours of duty in the Peace Corps?
That's right. I had 3 consecutive tours. I taught auto mechanics, and I was one of the only 2 auto mechanic instructors in the whole Peace Corps at that time. And so they kept asking me at the end of a tour, would you like to go somewhere else? And I said, yeah.
You kept saying yes, and so you kept. One of the fun stories you told me was how they used to, a piece of equipment for the Peace Corps would break down someplace out in the middle, out in the sticks, and they would put you in an airplane and fly you out there with a small box of tools, and then leave you there. So you either had to fix the car or walk home, right?
Yeah, it was the greatest adventure of my life.
I bet so. And from there, you came to the University of California, Santa Cruz, got involved with environmental studies, and started working at Molino Creek Farm Collective.
Yeah, Molino Creek Farming Collective, right after my time at UCSU, where I studied ecology and environmental studies. I ended up meeting this person that was founding a farm up in Davenport, Molino Creek Farming Collective, and became part of that and ended up farming there for about 12 years.
And in farming, of course, that's where you really started focusing on pest control and tractors.
Yes.
You being the mechanic, you can do both then, right?
That's right. Sometimes tractors and pest control go together.
You know, it's really amazing when people think of farmers. Well, what a simple job that is. But, you know, being a farmer, you have to know everything about everything. Everything from repairing a tractor to tracking down gophers to crop genetics. I mean, it's just an incredibly intense, knowledge-intensive business to do it right, correct?
That's right. That's one of the exciting things about farming is that it's incredibly diverse. I mean, you have to know everything from chemistry to animal husbandry.
Sound like Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
So what I really want to focus on today is your specialty, which is animal pest control without poisons. You know, poisons used to be the way we took care of just about everything because pretty easy to do. You go to the store and buy some poison and you spread it around and, you know, there goes the problem, gone. But things just don't go away, do they?
They don't, and poisons don't solve the problem. They kind of mask the problem, kind of like Western medicine. Mm-hmm. So my business is about giving people alternatives to using poisons, because obviously if you just take a stand to tell people not to use poisons and not give them an alternative, there's nowhere for them to turn. So I've come up with a series of measures that don't include poisons that solve problems.
Okay, and that's going to be what we're going to be talking about today is control without poisons. And you kind of have to be a thinker for this, don't you?
Well, it's fun. I mean, you have to kind of think a little bit about what an animal will do and or expect to do and look at their habits and use the animal's habits to actually solve the problem.
Outwit them.
That's right.
Just like Sun Tzu said, if you know your enemy and you know yourself, then you can fight. But before we go there, I'd like to go back to the notion of how things just don't go away. Producer Kelly Bear sent me a story a little bit earlier about how the plastics we're throwing into the oceans are showing up in the fish, and the fish are showing up in us. And it's kind of the same as true with our experience with poisons. We go out and poison a carcass to kill coyotes, for example, and end up killing eagles. We go out and we poison mosquitoes and we end up killing pelicans. So, you know, that poison just doesn't go away, does it?
No, actually, we probably all have a background residue of poison in our bodies right now. And especially,
does it help us stay immune?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
But especially right now, there's a huge amount of animals being poisoned accidentally because of the what are called second-generation anticoagulant poisons. They're so strong. Used to be it would take five or six times for an animal to eat the poison before it died. But the new second-generation anticoagulants are so strong that an animal eats one dose and it dies.
So we're talking about what's the rat poison that's the anticoagulant?
Decon.
Decon is one, but what's the generic name of it? I mean, they use it for blood thinners.
Oh, Coumadin.
Coumadin, yeah. So yeah, that's what we're talking about. And you say second generation, so that they figured out that they can kill animals or pests with these anticoagulants. But they figured out how to really kill them because they could make them much, much more potent.
Right, and the secondary poisoning of animals that eat these animals. See, when an animal is close to death after an anticoagulant
it's
poisoning,
weak.
Not only is it weak, but it's very thirsty. It comes out searching for water. And so when it's on the surface looking for water, that's when predators find the animals, and that's when the second animal gets poisoned.
So when we poison the pest, we poison the pest's predator. And when we poison the pest's predator, we lose the nature's ability to limit the population of the pest. So it seems like we're going in the wrong direction.
All right, you're taking the predators away.
Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about pests without poison with the Pest Without Poison guy. That would be Thomas Whitman. He of Gophers Limited, gophers limited.com. And you can play Stump the Expert today if you want. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
We were talking about how on a little 5-acre university experimental farm, gophers were eating up $600 a day in crops. $600 a day. Good illustration that if we do not control pests, pests will control us. Boy, you can just see that. Just let a garden go without weeding it, and the weeds take over, and it does everything else. So we have to control the pests, or the pests will indeed control us. That's the subject of this Food Chain radio show with Thomas Whitman, he of Gophers Limited. Not just gophers. What other kind of critters are we talking about?
Well, I work a lot with larger animals like opossum and skunk and raccoon. I do a lot of consulting about rat problems. Rats are probably second to gophers, the most destructive animal.
Oh, really?
Around. In fact, 20% of the world's food supply is eaten by rats every
year.
20%.
20%?
Yeah.
Just in storage, you mean? Or
in storage or in the field, but mostly in storage, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about alligators?
I haven't seen any in Santa Cruz.
You have to go on the other side of the country to find the alligators, right?
But I think it'd be fun.
Mm-hmm. But it seems like no matter where you are in the world, there is something there to compete with you for the foods that you're trying to grow and the gardens you're trying to keep and the homes you're trying to maintain and whatnot. So there's always something. What's your favorite pest, Thomas? The one that drives you nuts the most?
The one that drives me, yeah. My favorite or my least favorite?
Which one challenges you the most?
Probably rats and mice.
Rats and mice.
They're the thing about rats is that they're incredibly agile and can go any direction, whether it's burrowing under the ground or climbing up to your roof. I mean, they seem to always be able to find a way into a building, especially a farm building.
They're kind of like the cockroaches of the vertebrate world, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because, you think of critters that are virtually indestructible. One would be cockroaches and the other would be rats. Well, so what do we do with rats? You know, it used to be that you put out some anticoagulants and that would be the end of that.
Yeah, now I look at rats as a multi-stage approach. I mean, the first thing you have to do is figure out how they're getting into your house or barn or whatever. once you seal that off, then you need to get rid of the population that is inside. And the way that I do that is by various trapping techniques. I mean, you heard the expression, build a better mouse trap. Well, they've built a lot of better rat traps these days. Going from rat traps that are easier to set, easier to get a rat out of, rat traps that can be stabilized. You know when a rat trap goes off, how it flips?
Yeah.
That causes a lot of miscatches, and it causes a lot of...
we're talking about the spring ones with a copper thing on a little...
Yeah, your classic Victor rat trap.
Yeah.
If that trap isn't stabilized, either by screwing it onto something or tie wrapping it onto something or gluing it onto something, when it flips, it doesn't have an accurate catch where you want to catch the rat on its neck, and you can catch him by the foot or by the tail or anything else.
So the expression, you know, build a better mouse trap and the world will beat a path to your door, truly is true, given the fact that 20% of the world's food is being eaten by rats.
That's right.
20%?
Yeah, and there are a lot of more technically evolved rat traps, too. Like, for example, this trap called the Rat Zapper. It's an electronic rat trap where the rat goes into it, and then his front feet touch one metal plate when his back feet are on another, and he gets electrocuted. And there's no blood or anything. Mm-hmm. It's very quick for the rat, and it's very easy to clean up.
So are rats becoming technologically more adept at surviving in this world?
No, I think the rat technology has remained the same.
So you don't think as they have to contend with people like you, they don't become smarter?
Well, rats are one of the most wary creatures around, and a lot of people just set a rat trap and hope they catch the rat. But you have to go a little bit farther. You have to place your traps. I never use bait in my traps. I almost always just place the traps where the rats go, and you place the traps there, anchored. And leave them on set for a few days and let rats get used to them. They don't like new things. They won't go near a new thing in the environment. Sometimes they can be tempted.
So they are pretty smart. They're kind of like coyotes in that respect then, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. And so it's easy to find where rats go. I mean, they dribble urine wherever they go, and they don't clean their fur, so they leave like a brown smudge wherever they go, so you can usually see. And you can, because
they really are disgusting, aren't they?
They are. They're rats. Because of the dribbling of the urine, and their urine has a high phosphorus content.
Kind of burns holes in the floor?
No, but you can follow their trails with a black light, with an ultraviolet light. Yeah. You can actually see where they go.
So that would be a good way to see if we do have rats, and get a black light and walk around.
Well, usually you do have, if you have rats.
So do they go in the same places every day, like follow the same... general course?
Pretty much they do. They really like to stay close to the wall. Like right next to a wall is a good place to set a rat trap. They love climbing on pipes. They really like following Romax wire through attics. I mean, if you look at the white Romax wire in your attics, you'll see some of them are kind of brownish. That's because rats just follow them all the time. And those are great spots to set a rat trap.
Just... where the rats go.
That's right.
And then the idea is to put the rat trap there without baiting it and let the rats get used to it.
Right.
And then go back. Do you use gloves when you bait a trap to keep your fingers, the smell of you off the rat trap?
Well, actually, I don't use bait very often. Sometimes outside I do. And I do wear gloves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that concerned that a rat will smell my scent. I think the scent of the bait would overpower that. But one thing about baiting rat traps, especially the Victor types and other types, is that I will tie bait onto the trigger mechanism of the trap instead of like spreading peanut butter on there. You know, one thing, rats have evolved in the effect that they can actually lick the peanut butter off of a rat trap without getting caught.
Are you kidding?
I don't know if that's a natural evolution or it's a selection process.
Well, that's what I was trying to get at. They are figuring it out, aren't they? They're being pretty smart. Why are they so smart? Have you ever thought about that? I mean, what makes a rat so smart that they can lick the peanut butter off a rat trap without getting caught?
Well, I think it is probably selection. I mean, rat traps have been around for centuries. And the rats that are not very careful eaters
are no longer with us. So as we go about this task of managing pests, we're getting rid of the dumb ones and really creating smarter ones. So it's not just a matter of outwitting the rat once. Then you have to continue, and they get smarter, and you have to get smarter too.
Right. I try not to think of it in terms of smartness. I try to think of it in terms of an animal has a certain behavior, and if you catch all the animals that have that particular behavior, you're left with the animals that have a slightly different behavior. Like rats, it's true to rats, but it's also true with gophers. I mean, I work with gophers every day, and most gophers are straightforward, will run right into a trap and get caught. But when those guys are gone, then you have gophers that
don't run into the trap.
They don't. They shy away from traps. They make turns. Right. So you have to compensate for that.
And if you can't, if not with smartness, with what?
Cleverness.
Okay. Folks, we're talking about pest control without poisons. Now, if you'd like to join us today, you're perfectly welcome to do so with your pest control questions. Perhaps you can stump our expert, Thomas Whitman, he of Gophers Limited. Just pick up your phone, call 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain Radio Program, having lots of fun. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about the seasons of the pests, because we do live in a world where there are lots of different seasons, and as those seasons go round and round, so does the behavior of the pests that plague us. So, Food Chain Radio Program, Michael Olson, your host, 831-479-1080, 800-624-2665. Right back. Do stay tuned. Well, folks, we're moving into the autumn season here on California's Central Coast, around North America and the Northern Hemisphere, which means a major change of scenery. I woke up the other night by a huge racket out on my front deck, and looked out the front door, and there's a whole family of raccoons out there raising all kinds of hell. And they're pretty good at raising hell, those raccoons, are they not?
Well, raccoons are wonderful for raising hell. They're very busy and animate animals.
Are they as smart as rats?
Oh, they're smarter than rats.
They're smarter than rats. Raccoons are. How do you manage raccoons?
Well, the first thing about raccoons is that, well, it is in the autumn now and it's getting colder at night. So what raccoons are doing is looking for a place to last out the winter, and a warm place, especially with a furnace, is really ideal. So they're looking,
and they like your kitchen too.
That's true.
Yeah, if they can get into your kitchen and be heated by your heater, they're just as happy as they can possibly be.
Right. So they're running around homes looking for. They really like the vents around the bottom of a house. They like to tear one of those off and then go in there.
Oh, they actually tear them off.
Oh yeah, they are very strong animals, and they'll go in and live under the house for the winter. Usually a pretty large family, and sometimes they fight for that space.
So then what is it like when raccoons are fighting for space in your house?
It's very noisy. they're very loud animals, and they're very rough animals, and you can hear them bouncing on the walls, you know?
Huh. So how do you manage that?
Well, the first thing you do is like with any animals, you figure out how they get in. And then you get them to go out and not come back in. The way I do that in my business is the first thing I do is really figure out the entryway. And often it is one of those vents, or it's a deck that doesn't have a screened-in edge, or just a house that doesn't have any barriers to them to get under. If it's a vent hole, what I'll usually do is use an eviction liquid. Eviction liquids are things that are strong smelling that makes it uncomfortable for the animal to be in that place. Ammonia is pretty typical, but I prefer using, because I'm more on the organic side, I use pine sol, the soap, as an eviction liquid. And I just spray it under a house, usually at dusk, especially with a hose, with a fertilizer sprayer, and continue that for a couple nights, and sometimes that's enough. for a while, but you have to close off the space.
If you provide them a space, they will come, just like they say in the movies. Right. You build it, they will come.
And often I use one-way doors for that situation,
oh,
too.
No, so I like that idea.
They go out and they can't get back in again.
Huh. Well, folks, we're going to go to the phones. If you have a question for Thomas Whitman, he of Gophers Limited, you can stump the expert. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We're going to go and see what Dan has to offer. Dan, welcome to the food chain.
Well, thank you. I have I live up in the Redwood Forest. My neighbor between me and UCSC has 640 acres. I've always had trouble with rats, and I have luck with a pesticator that plugs into the wall outlet and it sends a pulse. Thomas, I'm sure you're familiar with that.
A pesticator?
Right, it's a high-pitched noise, you mean?
No, it's a pulse. It's from Global Instruments, and it works good. It's made in U.S., and if they only last a couple years, these black mice get in my walls. I hear them. Anyway,
do they drive you nuts when the mice are in your walls scratching around?
No, but I'm worried they're going to chew the wires, you know, and then they come in the house and come in my kitchen, and that part I don't like. But anyway, I got a heavy duty one. And they all the mice started running in my house, and the customer service said it's working, and I have to believe it because they're gone.
Wow.
Huh. Yeah, that thing works really good.
Well, anyway, there we go. We learned something every day here on the Food Chain Radio Program. Dan, thank you.
Thomas, I need your help with my current problem. I think one's coming in from outside. I haven't seen it, but I hear it about 4 in the morning.
And, a mouse?
I have hawthorn berries that I tincture for blood pressure, and they were in my kitchen, and for three nights in a row, they must be starving. It ate those. But anyway, I put a trap out, including the zapper, including the one that like the little have a heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've already answered my question that they don't like anything new. Because I had on the trap, I had almond butter, and it didn't touch it. Anyway, if I call your office, could you come and help me locate where they're getting in?
Sure.
That's what I'd like. And
gophers limited.com.
Yeah, I got that.
All right. Thanks for the call, Dan.
Can I give one bit of gossip on the raccoons?
Yeah, sure. Raccoon gossip's always good.
For 25 years, about 4 in the morning, I'd hear them washing in my bird water bowl. We have a huge mountain lion in our neighborhood now. I haven't seen a raccoon in 18 months. I was able to harvest my plums for the first time in 25 years.
Because of the mountain lion?
I think so. We've also got bobcats and coyotes.
Well, you know, that's
there's
good.
There's always three or four missing cat signs around.
Yeah, where's my cat? Well, that's a great point with respect to predators. And without predators, you know, the prey run amok, right?
That's right.
And so, yeah. And so that again, we go back. Thanks for the call, Dan. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I'll give you a call, Tom. Thanks.
Okay.
So that goes back to the point we were talking about earlier with respect to, you know, having a poison the prey, you really poison the predators, and when you get rid of your predators, then the prey run amok. So, like Dan said, well, we've got this new mountain lion in the neighborhood, and now I don't have any raccoon problems. So that there is something in that. You know, we're talking a little bit about the seasons of the pests. Give us a little idea of how pest activity works season by season. You know, fall we have the animals trying to move into our house. What happens in winter?
Well, in the wintertime, they're pretty much have moved into their warm spaces, and they're looking for food nearby. Like if you have a pet door and you have a raccoon living under your house, that's a perfect situation for a raccoon to come in and steal some cat food.
Or whatever kind of food.
Or yeah. Whatever, yeah. They can make a big mess in a kitchen.
And the worst thing you can do is feed your animals outside, right? Put a dish of dog food outside.
Well, it's okay to feed them outside, but not leave it overnight.
If you leave it overnight, you're going to feed all the neighborhood bears.
Right. I have a lot of people calling me about pet doors. And, you know, the simple answer is, hey, you should just close it at night.
And they don't?
No.
You mean...
And there's a new pet door where the animal can wear a collar to get in.
Well, they're missing Sun Tzu's point. If you know your enemy and you know yourself, you can win the battle. But if you're not thinking about your enemy, you're going to be in trouble because you're going to forget to close the dog door.
That's right.
Hey, folks, Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain Radio Program talking about controlling pests without poisons. Do you have a pest problem? Pick up your phone, join us. We're Thomas Whitman. I'll answer it. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Which pest pesters you most? Right back. Well, it's a fact. If you have something they want, they'll find a way to come and get it unless you figure out how to outsmart them or outguess them or out-something them, because they will find a way to come and get it. On the break, we were talking with Thomas Whitman, Kelly Bayer, and Michael Olson here on the Food Chain Radio Program about the three things that pests need.
Right, Michael. That's shelter or harborage. They need food and they need water. And that triangle of necessities has to be there, otherwise the animals won't be there. So, for example, if you seal off the bottom of your house and your deck, you're eliminating harborage or shelter, and you'll eliminate the possibility of a lot of problems. I get a lot of calls all year round about skunks. And skunks are a wonderful animal. I mean, they're just beautiful. They're very calm. They're very gentle.
Well, I know two problems with them.
Yeah?
One, of course, is that they spray.
Right.
And they have a... I mean, they walk through the neighborhood like they're King Kong, right? I mean, a skunk walks through the neighborhood, nobody bugs it at all. No dogs ever... Nothing bugs a skunk. But the other thing that frightens me about skunks is their tendency to harbor rabies.
Right. Well, that's true with
raccoons
and
yeah.
Possums and any animals, rats.
Mm-hmm.
So, but one thing about skunks is they do kind of walk around like they don't have any fear, and they don't have much fear. There are certain dogs that eat skunks and
really?
Other animals.
What kind of dog eats a skunk?
Well, like a wolf type dogs.
Wolf.
Not wolves, but wolf type dogs. You know,
uh-huh.
like Alaskan dogs.
So animals that are much closer to, you know, having the intelligence to live out in the wild might.
Right. I think any dog would at least try to eat a skunk, but then they get sprayed.
Mm-hmm.
And then they learn.
And then they learn, and that's that. So the only thing that really bothers the skunk is something that doesn't know what's coming then.
Right. Or some dogs never get it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's right.
Kelly was just telling you, her dog was sprayed four times.
It's like the dogs that take on porcupines.
Right.
And continue to take on porcupines. And you're always having to take your pliers and pull the quills out of their mouth because it's too stupid to figure that one out.
No, it's their instinct.
Yeah, it's their instinct.
All right.
So there's essentially, four kinds of controls for managing pests, right? There's the physical control where you block off access to the pests. Cultural controls, which is to say you improve the nature of your surroundings so that the pests are not comfortable there. Biological controls, which is to say bringing predators into the environment or working with pheromones or something like that.
Well, the best biological control let's look at gophers. That's the simplest one to look
at. Sure. Do gophers plague everybody in America, or is it just us?
You know, it's interesting. Gophers live in the Great Plains. They live in the Rockies. They live all on the western part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
They don't live on the East Coast at all.
Why is that?
I don't know why. It's really
perplexing. So if there was a clever... pest control expert who wanted to increase his business, maybe what he could do is come to the west of the Mississippi and collect some gophers and take them east?
I don't know. I mean, they can travel there if they want to. There is, surprisingly, the one population of gophers in Florida.
Huh. So they just, for some reason, do not like the soils of the east, and so they haven't populated the eastern seaboard of the United States.
That's the best explanation I can think of. You know, it's not about the weather because they live in the Midwest.
Yeah, right. Huh.
So anyway, the best predator for gophers is a cat. A feral cat, especially. And there's actually...
Why especially a feral cat?
Well, because I think they're more adept at catching rodents than...
Because they're hungry.
...than a cat that's been very domesticated. Although domestic cats are... A lot of them are really good gopher hunters and ratters. Especially, for some reason, the golden tabby.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but that one... Whenever I give a lecture, I ask people if they have a cat that's a good ratter, you know, or a good gopher catcher. And invariably... They have a golden tabby.
Huh.
So that's really good. And there's this nonprofit in town called Project Purr that relocates feral cats in rural areas just for that purpose.
Barn owls.
Barn owls are another great predator for gophers. A barn owl family, which you can attract by installing a barn owl box, can catch up to 1,000 gophers a year.
Wow.
The thing about barn owls, though, people buy a barn owl for a small area, is that they
travel around.
They range about 4 miles from their nest.
Mm-hmm.
And so often they'll leave a gopher right under their nest.
Because the gopher on the other side of the fence is always much greener.
I guess. Or maybe it has to do with their flyway patterns.
How does a barn owl find a gopher? Because the gophers are underground.
Well, at night, gophers actually are nighttime foragers. They come out of the ground and they wander around, relocate a lot. In fact, if you ever notice that a gopher sometimes pops up in the middle of your lawn, it's not because the gopher tunneled there. It's because he walked there. They walk across roads and stuff. And barn owls are very sophisticated in terms of hearing. The very shape of their face actually accentuates the ability to hear things. And their feathers are silent. So when they're flying, they're completely silent. So they can get very close to a gopher before the gopher knows it's there.
And all of a sudden, no more gopher. Okay, then we have a few more minutes. And when we get back, we're going to have Thomas give us some real simple tips that we can all take to get control of our gophers without poisons. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. Oh, my goodness, we have lots of phone calls. We'll get to them when we get back. Do stay tuned. Time to talk about it is. There I am. Hey, let's go to the phones really quickly because we do have callers. And let's start with Bob. Bob, welcome to the Food Chain. Whoops. Are you there, Bob? Maybe not. Maybe Bob forgot to listen. Okay, let's go to Roxanne. Roxanne, are you there? Okay, so that must mean I'm doing... There we go. There we go. Go ahead, Roxanne.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
I just met you the other day.
Uh-oh.
In the KSCO offices.
Well, welcome.
I just wanted to tell you that I had a redneck client.
Is that a breed?
Huh?
What's a redneck? That would be somebody who has red on his neck.
I don't know. He actually described himself that way.
Okay.
And he used his urine as a deterrent to pests like gophers, skunks. And he used to age it and then pour it around his property, and he says it works mightily.
Huh. Well,
have
there you,
ever
you go.
Heard that?
Thomas?
You know, Roxanne, I've heard about that quite a bit. In fact, aged urine does work really well. And there are a lot of products.
Why aged urine? What does that do? Like fermented or something?
It just smells stronger.
It just smells stronger, huh?
Stinky.
Stinky, yeah. Aged urine, you know, in the hardware store, there's probably countless bottles of urine of various animals.
Yeah.
You know, bobcat, mountain lion.
I always wonder how they get it.
Yeah, but how do they get it? That's what I want to know.
Well, they probably just wash it off the floor of a zoo. But my thinking is that a gopher and other animals, they don't, like, smell the urine of a bobcat or a mountain lion and say, whoa, there's something out here. I think the thing about urine is that it has ammonia in it, and the ammonia in urine is what keeps animals away.
That's true. Well, at least this is homemade.
So at least it was homemade?
Yeah, you don't have to buy it.
Oh, there you go.
You can make it yourself.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for the call, Roxanne. Really appreciate it. Bob, if you want to call back, we can pick you up there. I think I have Bob here. Bob, are you there?
Hello.
Gotcha. Go ahead.
Okay. I live in outside of Watsonville, on a pasture surrounded by berry farmers, and we are overrun with ground squirrels, and all of our hawks have disappeared the last couple of years.
Ooh. So first, why did the hawks disappear, Thomas?
Well, it's hard to say, but hawks are daytime feeders, and ground squirrels are out during the day, and ground squirrels are one of the most poisoned animals out there.
So we poison the ground squirrels, and when we poison the ground squirrels, the hawks ate the poisoned ground squirrels, and now there's no hawks to eat the ground squirrels, so the ground squirrels are running amok.
Yeah.
What do they do, Thomas? What do they do in that situation?
The ground squirrels?
So what do you do now that the natural balance is out of whack?
Well, I do a couple things. There are cultural procedures. If you have a farm, you can grow certain things that might be helpful, but usually you just have to lower the population manually.
We've killed hundreds, trapping, rodentators, shooting, you name it. Mm-hmm. We, of course, don't use poison. We're organic.
Good.
I like those things that they pump propane into the burrow system and then ignite it.
Right,
and
that's the rodentator.
Oh, those look fun.
Have to inform the sheriff beforhand that there's going to be a lot of explosions.
Those tools all work well. I actually have a repeating trap that catches you can catch a whole colony in one day with this.
Then you have to drown them or something.
Right, you have to do something humane.
Yeah.
The other thing is that's kind of new is this burrow blocking machine where it pumps sand and water into the burrows. So it seals up the burrow, which prevents re-inhabitation and eliminates the tripping hazard for animals.
Yeah, it's expensive equipment.
It is.
A cement pump sort of thing.
Well, exactly.
Bob, you might try importing some more hawks. Thank you for the call. Really appreciate it.
I'd love to have more hawks.
Well, there it is. And that's what happens when we poison. We throw the whole natural system out of balance, and we end up in bigger trouble than we were when we started. Thomas Whitman, Gophers Limited, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Michael.
GophersLimited.com, and thank you all out there for tuning in. Food Chain, remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.